Thank you, Mr. Segley. And happy Sabbath, everyone. What a great day to be alive. This is a beautiful day. It's a motorcycle day if I've ever seen one. And here I am in church. And on top of it, I'm speaking. The title of this message is Faith in God. So the first thing I did was get out my Strong's Concordance and looked up the word faith. And I'm telling you, I was shocked, absolutely shocked, to find out there are only two words in the Old Testament. And there's an excess of 200, vastly excess of 200 points of faith in the New Testament. I was really surprised by that. The one place in Habakkuk that's used a lot in the New Testament is Habakkuk 2 and verse 4, the just shall live by faith. That's a King James version, and it's really well put together. Faith comes from hearing, and hearing from the Word of God. That's Romans 10 and verse 17. Last Sabbath, we heard a message from Mr. Segley about the 4 points of prayer that he presented to us. Today, we've heard from David Wallach about a shipwreck, a terrible shipwreck, and how faith kept those people together, and they were rescued because of it. And today I'm speaking on faith itself. So we're hearing the Word of God, which is what we're here for in the first place. I'm starting out in the faith chapter, Hebrews 11. And the question posed here is, how do we know how the universe came to be? Hebrews 11 and verse 3 tells us very plainly, by faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command. So that what is seen was not made by what is visible. So in other words, there's things out there that the human eye cannot see, and that's what God made the universe from. Verse 4, we see that Abel offered by faith, and his remarks still stand to this day. By faith, Abel offered God a better sacrifice than Cain. And by faith, he was commended as a righteous man when God spoke well of his offering. And by faith, he still speaks even though he's dead. It's because Moses recorded this stuff for us today. And when we read it, we can get wonderful, wonderful understanding from it, encouragement, and so on. And we can see that situation carried out in Genesis 4 by Abel. And do we realize, though, that God requires faith from every one of us? Requires it. And this is in verse 6. Without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. Out at work, this particular point is one that guys get hung up on. They can't get the Bible open because they don't know how to prove that there's a God or that there's not a God. So you can't go to Scripture because that is a non-existent thing to them. You have to come at them and with an engineering type comment. Ask them, what holds you to this ground? How come you're standing on this ground? It's because the law of gravity. And there can be no law whatsoever unless there is a lawmaker and a law sustainer. Now, for reasons that I cannot explain, that seems to make sense to guys. But it doesn't mean they're opening up their Bible. They're just satisfied with the answer. Let's go to James 2, which is over about 3 or 4 pages. James 2. And here we see in James 2, in verse 17, that works are worthless and dead without faith, and vice versa. James says it in verse 20 as well. He says it a second time, that faith without works is useless. Go to verse 21 and 22. Examines Abraham, or points out Abraham's faith by the works that he did. This is verse 21. Was not our ancestor Abraham considered righteous for what he did when he offered up his son Isaac on the altar? You see that his faith and his actions were working together. They're working as one. And his faith was made complete by what he did. It wasn't just that he talked about faith, it's the fact that he went out and did it. And it seems impossible that God would ask someone to take the life of their own son. But that's what was asked of Abraham, and it happened that way. Okay, let's go to the Old Testament, and we'll start in Psalms 20. Psalms 20 and verse 7 and 8. Psalm 20 and verse 7 and 8. This is David speaking. He says, some trust in chariots, others trust in horses, but we trust in the name of the Eternal, our God. They are brought to their knees and fall, but we rise up and stand firm. Let's go to 1 Samuel 17. This is an example, in my opinion, of David's encounter with Goliath. 1 Samuel 17. Verse 43, Goliath curses and insults David. Now in verse 44, he says, come here. This is Goliath speaking. Come here. I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. Now in verse 45, we see that David compares himself to this Philistine. You come against me with sword, spear, and javelin. Just like some people trusted in horses and chariots, Goliath is trusting in his sword, his spear, and his javelin. But when you see that three-letter word, there's going to be a big shift take place in the rest of this sentence. But I come against you in the name of the Eternal Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled. David now turns the threat on Goliath, and he says, this day the Eternal will turn you over to me, and I'll strike you down. I'll cut off your head. Today I will give the carcass of the Philistine army to the birds of the air, the beasts of the field, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. Those are his own words, Goliath's own words brought back on him. And we can see that David trusted in God. He trusted in God's name, used God's name, and told it to Goliath. And sure enough, Goliath went down just exactly as David said he would. Precisely. We see here that the faith and trust in the name of God is what carried the day. And that was in Psalms 20 as well. We read it beforehand. The next comment I want to talk about is Elisha the prophet and a widow. Elisha and a widow. We're going to go to 2 Kings verse 4. 2 Kings, correction, chapter 4. Here's an example of a poor woman with an awful lot of faith. 2 Kings 4 and verse 1. The widow of a man from the company of the prophets cried out to Elisha, your servant, my husband, is dead. And you know that he revered the Eternal. But now his creditor is coming to take my two boys as his slaves. Elisha replied to her, how can I help you? Tell me, what do you have in your house? Your servant has nothing there at all except a little oil. No bread, no muffins, no buns, nothing except a little jar of oil. She had no meat, no potatoes, nothing to eat for three people. So she comes to Elisha the prophet. He says to her, go around and ask all your neighbors for empty jars. Don't ask for just a few. Then go inside and shut the door behind you and your sons. Pour the oil into all the jars, and as each is filled, put it aside. Right now in 2020, if we were destitute, could we go over and knock on our neighbor's door and ask for empty jars? Could we be doing that? Do we have that kind of work, that kind of faith, that kind of understanding that God is going to be there for us? Do we have that kind of courage to go out and do that? That's a tough thing to think about doing. But she went and did it. She left him and afterwards shut the door behind her and her sons. She brought the jars, they brought the jars to her, and she kept pouring. When all the jars were full, she said to her son, bring me another one. But he replied, there's not another jar left. Then the oil stopped flowing. She went and told the man of God, and he said, go, sell the oil and pay your debts. You and your sons can live on what is left. A little jar of oil, and her whole life, her whole existence depended on that. And she had the faith to go out and knock on the doors of all of her neighbors and her friends and the strangers. And God blessed her for that work, for being able to carry it out. Next example, one page over. Elisha the prophet and a Syrian general. 2 Kings 5. This is Naaman, a Syrian general. He's extremely knowledgeable. He has carried out wars against Israel, and God has blessed them for that, because Israel didn't want to follow their God, and this general took them apart. But the problem with this general is that he is a leper, terrible disease. So this Naaman, this general, is not only a general, he's extremely wealthy and very knowledgeable warrior. Has no fear of anything. Naaman goes to Israel and arrives at Elisha's house. What happens in verse 10? Elisha doesn't even bother to come out of his home. Here's a Syrian general, probably the second in command of the entire nation, and Elisha doesn't even go out to meet him. He sends his servant out. What happens in verse 11? We have one angry Syrian. Verse 11 says, Naaman went away angry and said, I thought that he would at least come out to me and stand and call in the name of the Eternal, his God, wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Did we catch what he said there? He used the name the Eternal, the ever-living God. This man knew the God of Israel by name, knew him by name, and called him by name. Well, it didn't happen that way. So we see that he was very angry, and the more he talked, the more angry he became. Are not the Abana and the Pophar rivers in Damascus better than any of the waters in Israel? Could I wash in them and be clean? Why not? So he turned and went away in a rage. And what happened was, the more he talked, the more angry he got. Rage is the next thing close to violence. He became almost violent at that point in time. When you have an angry person, try changing their opinion. Try changing their ideas. Try changing the thing that they want to do. He wanted to get out of there. But here's what happens in verse 13. Naaman's servants went to him and said, sir, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then, when he tells you, just go wash and be clean? So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan River 7 times, as the man of God had told him. And his flesh was restored and became like clean like that of a young boy. 6 times he went down in this river, and his hands came up exactly the same way. His feet came up. His face was the same way. Had all this leprosy all over it. And yet he went back a 7th time. 6 times he was a failure. Would you be able to go back in a river the 7th time? That's a pretty tough thing to ask, but he did it. And what happened? He was clean. Clean like a young teenager. Then Naaman and all his attendants got in their chariots and went back to the man of God. He stood there before him and said, "Now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. Please accept now a gift from your servant." See how humble he is? "Please accept the gift from your servant." The prophet answered, "As surely as the Eternal lives, whom I serve, I will not accept a thing." And even though Naaman urged and urged and urged him, he refused. "I will not." "If you will not," Naaman said, "please let your servants be given as much as earth as 2 pair of mules can carry. For your servant will never again make burnt offerings and sacrifices to any other God except the Eternal." And then he asked for forgiveness. Listen to this. "But may the Eternal forgive your servant for this one thing. When my master enters the temple of Rimmon, an idol, to bow down, and he is leaning on my arm, and I bow there also, when I bow down in the temple of Rimmon, may the Eternal forgive your servant for this." Right now, Elisha could just indict him for being clean and then going into an idol's temple. He wants to still go back into an idol's temple. He still wants to do that because his boss is going to ask him to do it, and he's asking for forgiveness. So here is a great chance for Elisha to judge him, condemn him, criticize him, put him down, anything and everything, all of the above. But listen to the 3 words he says. He does not judge, does not criticize, does not condemn. He says, "Go in peace." What a beautiful ending to a great story. Man of faith. Proverbs 24, we'll skip that one. A famine arrives in Israel, and Naomi and her family decide to get out of Israel and they go to Moab. They get over there and they're living there a little while, and Naomi's husband, Elimelech, dies. Well, her 2 sons are there with her. So what happens? Both of her sons die also. The name of one is Melion, the name of the other is Chilion. Don't ask me if that's right or not. I kind of doubt that. So Naomi now is burdened very heavily with 2 daughters-in-law, and they're Moabites, are not even Israelites. Now she wants to get out of Moab and return to her family in Israel. And this is taking place in the book of Ruth, the 1st chapter. And that is just before 1 Samuel. Book of Ruth, only 4 chapters. Here we are. In verses 8 and 9, we see that she urges her daughter-in-laws to stay where they're at. Naomi said to her 2 daughters-in-laws, "Go back, each one of you, to your mother's home. May the Eternal show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Eternal grant each of you to find another husband." And she kissed them, and they wept there. And they said, we will go back with you and your people. Well, they argue clear on down through verse 13. And finally in verse 14, more weeping, the girl named Orpah stays with her people in Moab. However, in verse 15, that doesn't happen with the other daughter-in-law. Look, Naomi said, your sister-in-law is going back to her people. Go back with her. Now listen to what Ruth says. This is trustworthiness right here. This is loyalty right here. This is faith right here. Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people. And here's the real clincher, your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Eternal deal with me ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me. Then Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go, so she stopped arguing with her. Long story, but we're going to go into the end of the story, because it has a great ending. Look up the word Ruth and what it means. Her name means good, fine friend. Good, fine friend. That's what the word Ruth has meant. Well, in Ruth 4 and verse 13, Ruth is getting married now to a wealthy, wealthy family relative. So the fortunes are turning for the better. Ruth 4 and verse 13, so Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. Then he went in to her and the Eternal enabled her to conceive and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi, praise be to the Eternal, who this day has left you without, who has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. May he become famous. They're talking about the son now. May he become famous throughout all of Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law Ruth, who loves you and who is, listen to this, fellas, listen, and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth. I got a kick out of that when I read it. But anyway, here is Ruth's faith and loyalty. She had faith in Almighty God. She had faith enough to stay with her mother-in-law and endure all the suffering that started out and wound up with a very, very beautiful ending. Let's go from here to Malachi 3, where they're talking about robbing God. Malachi 3 and verse 6 through 10. I, the Eternal, do not change, so you, O descendants of Jacob, are not destroyed. Ever since the time of your forefathers, you have turned away from my decrees and have not kept them. Return to me, and I'll return to you, says the Eternal. And you're asking, how are we to return? Will a man rob God? Yet you've robbed me. But you ask, how in the world did we rob you? I'll tell you, in tithes and offerings. You're under a curse. The whole nation of you is under a curse. What percentage of the people in America tithe to God? I don't think that it's even 50%. And Mr. Armstrong always maintained that if 51% of the nation of America is honest, forthright, and moral, the country can stand. But if that tilts to where it's 51% become immoral and only 49% are moral, the country will no longer stand. So we have some questioning to think about here for ourselves. Just a little food for thought. Anyhow, that's what they're talking about here. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Almighty, and see if I will not open up the floodgates of heaven and pour you out a blessing that you will not have enough room for it. And I'm always thinking when I read this about in Egypt, about Joseph and all the massive amounts of grain they collected there. Just tremendous for 7 years to avoid the famine that was coming. When I was a little boy growing up in Minnesota, off my father's farm there, we had a farm about 2 miles out of town, and we lived in town and drove out there to do the farm work. And in the late 40s, 48, 49, and through some of the 50s, the food production was so great and so immense that the grain elevators were overrun by it. They couldn't haul it off fast enough. So during that period of time, there was massive amounts of corn and wheat, oats and barley just piled up outside the grain elevators because they couldn't, they didn't have any place to store it. And the corn dryers, they had to dry the corn out before they could use it, run 24 hours a day, night and day they ran them, just to keep the corn dry. And there was so much they just couldn't keep it all. Interesting thing happened from that. The U.S. government didn't know how to handle this. So this was going on, overproduction, overproduction, overproduction. So what they did was decided to have a farm bank initiative in which you were paid by the federal government not to grow anything. So what happened from that? The doctors, the dentists, the lawyers, the CEOs bought off farmland and got paid for not doing any work on it. Just an amazing amount of money they made. Then on top of that, the Soviet Union was having bad conditions over there. The people weren't able to get quite enough food for themselves. So America decided to be benevolent and decides to give, not give it away, but to sell this grain at a reduced price. So the Soviet Union bought up a bunch of it. And as I understand it, the people didn't get a bite of it because the Soviet Union, the people over there were more capitalist than America. They took the stuff over to, and sold it on the open market in Europe. So our tax dollars went to, for nothing there again. They took advantage of us. Okay, this week, a newspaper writer wrote in his columns, "God bless America, land that I love." And that became like a statue where he was just run down from that. I never get a chance to read it because I don't know what paper it was in. But this writer was criticized for his words. Well, let's go to verse 16 and verse 18, 16 through 18. We're going to see how God is going to honor people that have faith. "Then those who feared the Eternal talked with each other," and we can be doing that today, "and the Eternal listened and heard. A scroll of remembrance was written in his presence concerning those who feared the Eternal and honored his name. They will be mine, says the Eternal Almighty, in the day when I make up my treasured possession. I will spare them, just as in compassion a man spares his son who serves him. And you will again see the distinction between the righteous and the wicked, between those who serve God and those who do not." I don't have quite enough for this one. I'll cut it short for a minute here. There was a court ruling that took place not long ago, within the last 2 weeks or so. And the court ruling dealt with the government singling out a church for tax exemptions. They singled out some church, they didn't give the name of it. But this thing rolled through the courts, and what happened, the courts eventually sided with the church. So the federal agency was supposed to cease and desist. What happened? The court ruling meant nothing. This agency continued on just as they've been doing all the time. So things could be changing in our nation, and things could be getting a little more tight. And some of these things that we're seeing here, like the widow with the oil and so on, could possibly happen to us. I don't know. But things are going to be a little bit different in the future, I can tell you that. Well, brethren, have a great Sabbath. and God bless.